All right, so today we're diving deep into ancient Israel.
Buckle up.
Yeah, get ready for a wild ride, right? We're tackling the concept of covenant kingship.
Covenant kingship.
And to guide us.
Yep.
We've got excerpts from Professor Robert Van Noy's lecture.
Oh, good one.
Exodus to Exile.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the books of Samuel and King.
Oh, yeah. Those are jam-packed.
Jam-packed with drama.
Intrigue.
Divine drama.
Definitely divine drama.
And we might even uncover some leadership lessons.
Oh, always relevant.
That are still relevant today.
For sure.
So it's this fascinating look at a society.
Yeah.
Grappling with leadership.
Like the very idea of it, right?
Yeah.
You've got the Israelites at this point.
Right.
They believed God was their king.
Uh-huh.
But then
they want a human king.
Like all the other nations.
Like a power struggle.
Talk about a power struggle.
It's like they're saying, hey, God, we appreciate you.
Right.
But we also want someone we can see and hold accountable.
Someone tangible.
Yeah.
What did Professor Van Noy say about all this?
So where does he start with this tension?
Well, he starts in 1 Samuel 8.
Okay.
Where we see the Israelites just...
demanding a king.
Demanding a king.
They're not totally rejecting God, though, right?
No, not completely.
It seems like they think...
they think they need this.
A visible leader.
Like a figurehead.
To unite them.
To unite them and make them strong.
And be like their neighbors.
Like all the other nations.
With Samuel, right.
Oh, Samuel.
Who was God's spokesperson.
The prophet.
He's like, hold on a second.
He's like, not so fast.
Yeah.
He warns them. He's like...
yeah.
This isn't just a simple upgrade.
Human kings.
Human kings.
Come with baggage.
They've got their own set of problems, oh yeah.
So it's like Samuel's giving them a reality check.
Trying to, at least.
But are they listening?
I mean, they're so fixated on this idea of a king.
Yeah.
That they don't really heed his warnings.
So they get their king.
They get Saul. But then...
but things get interesting.
1 Samuel 12.
Okay.
Samuel delivers this powerful speech.
Mm-hmm.
He reminds them
mm-hmm.
that even with a human king, they're still under God's authority.
Ultimately, yeah.
And this is where Van Noy points out this really interesting detail about a covenant conditional.
Covenant conditional. What's that?
It's in verses 14 and 15.
Okay.
He argues
yeah.
that the passage isn't saying
yeah.
that the Israelites automatically owed allegiance to both God and the king.
To both.
It's more like
okay.
they were given a choice.
A choice.
Which creates this huge dilemma.
Oh, boy.
Who do they follow, ultimately?
That is a dilemma.
Imagine the pressure.
So break that down for me.
What exactly is like,
what is a covenant conditional?
Right.
And how does it change?
How does it change how we understand this whole kingship thing?
Yeah.
Imagine it like this, a
right.
what-if clause
okay.
in a contract.
Right.
The covenant conditional implied that the Israelites' blessings were dependent...
on their obedience.
On their obedience to God.
But now...
with a human king.
You've got a human king in the mix.
Yeah.
Who are they supposed to obey?
Right.
If the king's orders
yeah.
conflict with God's will.
Oh, that's tough.
Talk about pressure.
Yeah. I can't even imagine.
I know, right?
Trying to navigate that.
It's like trying to please your parents and your friends.
Yeah. When they want totally different things.
Totally different things.
And those loyalties clash.
They clash.
So how does this play out with Saul?
So... Saul.
The first king.
The first king.
Has he managed to balance those competing demands?
Well, Saul's story
yeah.
is a classic example of how this whole ideal of covenant kingship
yeah.
could go wrong.
Okay, so he doesn't quite nail it.
He starts out strong.
Oh, okay.
Some military victories.
All right.
But then he seems to forget who's really in charge.
Oh, he gets a little too big for his britches.
Give me the juicy details.
All right.
What are some of his major fumbles?
Okay, so chapters 13 and 15 of 1 Samuel.
Okay.
They're key here.
Right.
We see Saul repeatedly disobeying.
Disobeying?
God's instructions.
Oh, no.
Which were relayed through Samuel.
So it's not like he's completely ignoring religion.
No, he's still performing sacrifices, rituals.
Oh, okay.
But it's like he thinks he can pick and choose which commands to follow.
He wants to have his cake and eat it too.
Yeah, that never ends well.
It never does.
One striking example.
Okay, give me an example.
1 Samuel 15.
Right.
Saul was supposed to completely destroy the Amalekites.
Destroy everything.
Everything, all of it.
Wow.
But instead, he spares their king
oh.
and keeps some of the best livestock.
Oh, he kept some goodies.
Himself.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so Samuel confronts him.
And when Samuel confronts him,
uh-huh.
Saul tries to justify himself.
What's his excuse?
He's like, oh, I was saving this loot for sacrifices to God.
Oh, come on. That's like...
I know, right?
It's like a kid saying, I didn't eat the cookies.
Yeah.
When there are crumbs on their face.
Exactly.
Samuel sees right through it.
He does.
What's his response?
Oh, his response is great.
Okay.
To obey is better than sacrifice.
Ooh.
What a line.
It's not about those outward displays.
No, it's about true devotion.
True devotion.
And alignment with God's will.
Even when it's hard.
Even when it's difficult.
Or doesn't make sense.
Or it doesn't make sense to us.
So Saul's downfall isn't just about forgetting a ritual.
No.
It's deeper than that.
It's about failing to live up to that covenant agreement.
He's putting his judgment and desires above God.
Above God's clear instructions.
That's got to have consequences.
Oh, it does.
So what happens?
Well, Saul's reign ends in tragedy.
Right.
But his story is more than ancient history.
Right.
It raises these timeless questions about leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Obedience.
Mm-hmm. And the consequences.
Because our choices.
Speaking of consequences.
Uh-oh.
Saul's failure leads to a pivotal moment.
What is it?
The division of the kingdom.
Okay, so the kingdom splits.
It does.
What does that look like?
We'll get into that.
I'm hooked. Tell me more.
Stay tuned. All right, so after Solomon's reign.
Yeah, things get a little messy.
It's like a soap opera.
Oh, tell me more.
The kingdom splits into Israel in the north, Judah in the south.
Got it.
And one and two kings.
Yeah.
They kind of become this chronicle of how these two kingdoms are doing.
Okay.
They paint a pretty stark picture.
Of what?
Of how their faithfulness or lack thereof.
Ooh, interesting.
To the covenant with God.
Yeah.
Directly impacted their fate.
So it's like a direct connection.
It's a correlation.
Between their actions and the outcome.
Yeah, like, hey, remember those promises and warnings? They weren't just empty words.
Actions have consequences.
Big time.
So what's fascinating about all this?
Well, for me...
It's the dynamic we see play out
between
the kings and the prophets.
Oh,
it's like the prophets are these divinely appointed accountability partners.
I like that.
Always there.
Yeah.
To call out the kings.
When they mess up.
When they stray from that covenant path.
So it's not just the kings making their own choices.
Right. They've got these prophetic figures.
It's checks and balances.
Challenging them, reminding them.
Of their obligations.
To God and to the people.
To lead well.
Lead responsibly.
That must have been annoying for the kings.
I'm sure there were times.
You have someone.
Constantly second guessing.
Yeah, like give me some space.
Let me make my own decisions.
Did any of them actually push back?
Well, the fact that only two kings.
Two.
Hezekiah and Josiah.
Okay.
Both from Judah.
Both from Judah.
Get unqualified approval.
In these books.
Yeah. It speaks volumes.
So the bar was high.
Very high.
For what it meant.
To be a righteous king.
A true covenant faithful king. So if these books were written for the people returning from exile.
Good point.
Yeah.
How do they fit in?
Weren't they mostly from the southern kingdom, Judah?
Mostly, yeah.
And if so,
yeah.
Why spend so much time on the Northern Kingdom's kings?
That's where Chronicles comes in.
Oh, okay.
Same basic historical period.
A different perspective.
Slightly different.
Right.
Remember, Chronicles was written for a community trying to rebuild.
After a tough time.
After that devastating exile.
So Kings is about understanding why they ended up in exile.
Yeah, like how did we get here?
And Chronicles is about hope. And starting over.
A foundation for rebuilding.
Okay, that makes sense.
So less about rehashing the past.
More about moving forward.
Charting a path forward.
But it's interesting that it still includes all this stuff about kings.
Yeah.
You'd think they'd be kind of disillusioned with the whole monarchy thing.
After everything that went down.
Yeah.
But Chronicles takes a very deliberate approach to kingship. It focuses heavily on the lineage of David.
Okay.
Highlighting his devotion to God.
Even with his flaws.
Even in the midst of his flaws.
So it's like saying,
hey, even though we messed up as a nation, God's promise to David, the promise of a future Messiah, that promise is still alive.
Okay. So even after exile, Chronicles is saying there's still hope.
There's still hope.
And that hope is tied to this future king.
Who will embody those ideals
of covenant leadership,
of true covenant leadership.
But doesn't that raise questions about the monarchy itself?
Well,
if they're looking forward to a Messiah,
right,
why even bother with regular kings anymore?
It's not about dismissing monarchy altogether.
Okay.
It's more about reframing it.
Reframing it? How so?
Chronicles emphasizes that even the greatest kings are human.
They make mistakes.
They stumble. They need God's guidance.
So even David,
even David's
the greatest king, messed up.
But what set him apart was his willingness to repent.
Okay.
To seek forgiveness.
To get back on track.
And get back on track.
So it's less about being perfect.
Yeah.
And more about that humility.
Humility is key.
To admit when you've messed up.
And to try to make things right.
It's holding up David as this model.
Not of perfect kingship,
right,
but of resilient faith.
Resilient faith. I like that.
And that message was so important for the returning exiles.
Yeah. Why?
They needed to know that even after exile,
yeah,
they weren't disqualified
from God's plan.
They could rebuild their lives, their nation,
but a renewed commitment.
A renewed commitment to the covenant.
And a willingness to learn from the past.
Hey, we're not going to sugarcoat the past.
Right.
But we're not going to let it define us.
We're going to build a better future.
Starting with that relationship with God.
And that rebuilding process.
It involved more than just physical structures.
What else?
Chronicles puts a huge emphasis on the temple.
The temple.
It's not just as a building.
Okay.
But as the symbolic heart of their relationship with God.
So the temple was a big deal.
A big deal.
But what about their relationship with the kings who ruled over them after they returned?
That's an interesting question.
How did that play into this whole idea of covenant kingship?
Well, the post-exilic period,
yeah,
it wasn't exactly a golden age of righteous kings.
Oh, really?
The kings who ruled Judah after the exile,
yeah,
they were often caught
between
the demands of foreign powers,
okay,
and the expectations of their own people.
So they're walking this tightrope.
Trying to balance
political realities.
Political realities and religious ideals.
That's going to be tough.
Not easy.
Does Chronicles offer any advice on how to navigate that?
Chronicles doesn't give any easy answers.
Okay.
But it does provide a framework.
For thinking about leadership.
For leadership in challenging times.
Then what's that framework?
It reminds us that true leadership isn't about amassing power or personal gain.
It's about accountability.
Okay.
A willingness to put the needs of others above your own.
That resonates even today.
It does, doesn't it?
It's like, regardless of your position,
your title,
true leadership
is about using your influence
to make a positive impact.
What's the positive impact?
Chronicles underscores that point.
By highlighting
justice,
compassion
as essential
qualities of good leadership.
You got it.
So it's not enough to just be in charge.
It's about how you lead.
You have to lead in a way
that reflects God's character
and upholds those covenant principles.
Is exactly.
It's not just about following rules.
No, it's deeper.
It's about embodying those values
of justice and compassion
in everything you do.
Everything you do.
Recognizing that leadership
comes with responsibilities,
not just privileges.
Responsibilities, not just privileges.
And those responsibilities extend beyond just politics, right?
Beyond politics.
Yeah, Chronicles suggests, it suggests that these principles of covenant faithfulness
apply to all of life.
To all aspects of life.
Family, community.
SD.
How we treat the vulnerable.
The most vulnerable.
So covenant isn't just this religious concept.
It's bigger than that.
It's a blueprint for a better world.
It's a way of life.
It's about recognizing our interconnectedness.
And that our choices impact each other.
That's a great way to put it.
Makes you think.
About what kind of world we're building today.
Are we prioritizing power, self-interest, short-term gains?
Or are we investing in justice, compassion, and a sustainable future?
What kind of legacy are we leaving?
That's a powerful question.
It is.
Were there any specific examples in Chronicles that illustrate this idea of covenant living?
That feel relevant to us today?
Oh, absolutely.
Give me one. One example that comes to mind is King Josiah's reforms.
That's right. Okay.
He inherited a kingdom.
Yeah.
Deeply entrenched in idolatry and corruption.
A mess.
But instead of giving up, he launched this radical program of renewal.
What did he do?
He tore down the idols.
Okay.
He cleansed the temple.
Wow.
He reinstated the Passover celebration.
He was busy.
And he rededicated the nation.
The covenant with God.
He was like a spiritual cleanup crew.
Right.
Sweeping away generations of baggage.
Getting back to those core values.
That had been neglected.
But he didn't stop there.
You're right.
Professor Van Noy mentioned something about social justice issues.
Josiah's reforms tackled those too.
Okay, like what?
Issues of social injustice.
Okay.
Oppression, corruption.
He understood.
He understood that true faithfulness to the covenant
involved more than just rituals.
It meant caring for the vulnerable, upholding justice, ensuring everyone was treated fairly.
So it wasn't just about the temple.
It was about the whole system.
Spiritual renewal and social transformation.
They go hand in hand.
It makes you think.
It does, doesn't it?
About what kind of deep cleaning we need today.
in our own institutions and systems?
What idols do we need to tear down?
What injustices need to be addressed?
What does it mean to truly live out these covenant principles
in a way that transforms our world?
That's a lot to consider.
It is.
So Josiah was a reformer.
A reformer king.
What about everyday people?
Ordinary folks.
Yeah. Does Chronicles have anything to say about how they can live out this covenant idea?
That's a great question.
In their daily life.
I think the answer lies in how Chronicles portrays the community.
Okay.
It emphasizes communal responsibility.
Okay.
Caring for the poor and vulnerable.
Uh-huh.
Upholding justice and righteousness.
In all aspects of life.
It takes a village.
Everyone has a role to play.
In creating a society.
That reflects those covenant values.
Of justice, compassion, accountability.
I couldn't agree more.
And I think that's a good place to pause for now.
We've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
I'm looking forward to our final part.
Me too.
Where we can delve even deeper into these ideas.
And their implications for us today.
This has been an incredible conversation.
It has.
All right, so we're back for the final part of our deep dive into covenant kingship.
It's been quite a journey.
It really has. We've seen how this idea played out
in
the lives of kings like Saul and David.
Right.
And how Chronicles presented this message of hope and renewal.
For those returning from exile.
Exactly. But before we wrap up,
okay,
I want to circle back to those two kings.
Oh, yeah.
Who got unqualified approval.
Hezekiah and Josiah.
What made them stand out?
What can we learn from their stories?
That's what I want to know.
Well, what's fascinating about them is that they faced these incredible challenges.
Yeah, they did.
But they remained committed
to God and the covenant.
To God and the covenant.
Hezekiah, for example.
Right.
He faced the Assyrian Empire.
Our formidable enemy.
They'd already conquered the northern kingdom.
Right.
But Hezekiah didn't waver.
He didn't.
In his trust in God.
What did he do?
He turned to the prophet Isaiah for guidance.
Oh.
He rallied the people to prayer.
Mm.
And he made a bold stand.
Against the Assyrians.
And ultimately.
Yeah.
Witnessed a miraculous deliverance.
It's pretty amazing.
So he wasn't just sitting around hoping for the best.
No, he was proactive.
He was actively seeking God's guidance.
Right.
Taking practical steps.
To prepare.
And never giving up.
On the possibility of divine intervention.
Faith in action.
I like that.
So Hezekiah's story reminds us.
Yeah.
That faithfulness doesn't equal passivity.
It requires courage, determination.
Willingness to take risks.
Trusting God will be there.
Even in tough times.
Even in the most challenging circumstances.
It also highlights the importance of seeking wise counsel.
Like he did with Isaiah.
But wasn't that dependence on prophets also a potential weakness?
In what way?
What if the prophet was wrong?
Well, that's a good point.
Or what if their advice wasn't the best strategically?
You're right.
That could backfire.
It highlights the need for discernment.
For sure.
Both for the kings and anyone in leadership.
It's about relying on advisors, but ultimately,
yeah,
the leader makes the final call.
And bears the responsibility.
Okay, so Hezekiah shows us
what
it looks like to lead with faith and courage.
Against all odds.
What about Josiah?
Josiah.
What were the defining moments of his reign?
Josiah's story is interesting.
Yeah.
Because he came to the throne so young.
Oh, really?
And inherited a kingdom in rough shape.
Full of idolatry and corruption.
Yeah, but instead of being overwhelmed.
What did he do?
He launched this radical program of reform.
Reform, okay.
Guided by the rediscovery of the Book of the Law.
The Book of the Law, okay.
He tore down idols, cleansed the temple, reinstated Passover.
He was busy.
He rededicated the nation to the covenant.
Wow, so he's like this cleanup crew.
I like that analogy.
He's sweeping away generations of spiritual baggage.
And getting back to those core principles.
But he didn't stop there, right?
Right.
You mentioned something about social justice issues.
Yeah, Josiah's reforms addressed those too.
Okay, like what?
Issues of oppression, corruption, ensuring everyone was treated fairly.
So it wasn't just about cleaning up the temple.
Yeah.
It was about cleaning up the whole system.
Exactly.
Spiritual renewal and social transformation.
Going hand in hand.
It makes you think about what that kind of deep cleaning would look like today.
In our own world?
What idols do we need to tear down?
What injustices need to be addressed?
What does it mean to live out these covenant principles in a way that transforms our world?
Those are big questions.
They are.
But they're worth asking.
Both Hezekiah and Josiah show us.
That leadership isn't just about maintaining the status quo or clinging to power.
It's about courage.
courage to confront injustice,
to challenge complacency,
to inspire people to live up to their highest ideals.
It's about recognizing
we're all accountable,
not just to some distant God,
but to each other.
That's a powerful insight.
And it brings us back to this core idea of covenant as this foundational principle.
Or building healthy relationships.
Communities, societies.
It's about making commitments.
Holding ourselves and others accountable.
Striving to live in a way that honors those commitments.
It's about recognizing our actions have consequences.
That we have a responsibility.
To use our influence wisely.
For the good of all.
For the good of all.
It's like those principles
of trust, loyalty, integrity, accountability.
They apply whether we're talking about a covenant with God
or a covenant with each other.
They're the building blocks of any relationship
that aspires to be just, compassionate, and sustainable.
That's one of the most important takeaways
from our deep dive.
It's not just an ancient concept
confined to scripture.
It's a timeless principle
that can shape our lives, our relationships, our world
for the better.
For the better.
This has been such an eye-opening journey.
It has.
We've gone from the dramas of ancient Israel
to reflections on leadership and responsibility today.
It's amazing how these ancient texts still speak to us.
They offer timeless wisdom
about leadership, faithfulness, accountability,
the enduring power of hope and renewal,
even in the face of adversity.
Even in the face of adversity.
So as we wrap up,
yeah,
here's a final thought to ponder.
What is it?
What are the covenants that shape your life?
Ooh, that's a good one.
What commitments have you made?
To yourself, to your loved ones, to your community, to the world.
How are you living up to those commitments?
That's a question worth reflecting on.
It is.
It's been a privilege joining you on this journey.
Likewise.
Until next time.
May your deep dives be filled with fascinating insights
and thought-provoking conversations.
Thanks for listening, everyone.